and vision, you know, pictures. The, I mean, Neert as the rights to the third policeman. Neert is a director of movies. The, we have that there. We have people who are working with traditional musicians and are interested in different aspects of music. You know, that all this is all there. And we have, the reason we have gained control over what we do is because we have gotten some of the decisions right for that, because, you know, he's the I don't know, he has helped us secure the control of what we do. And, you know, he said recently, this week, we were talking about stage production, we're learning more and more that we have to, there are no people out there who are going to give us, going to be able to make a film for us. There are no people out there who are going to make a sleeve for us. There are no people out there who are going to design a stage set for us. They don't exist, because it must reflect the group.
But aren't you eventually, I mean, say things carry on as they have been for 5 years, aren't you? I mean, it's like giving yourself too much. You just have to find those people who can do that.
Well, this is what we're doing. We're trying to find somebody that understands the root of what you'll never find.
I think you're overblowing the importance of what it is that they have to do. You know, to if you like, design a stage production or an album sleeve for U2 is not an incredibly complicated thing. You don't need a lot of technology or skill. You just have to be able to produce something simple that says a lot. And we can do it a lot of the time, but finding someone to do something quite simple isn't really that difficult. It's, if you go to a big kind of designer company and you want to be, you want to spend £10,000 or something on designing me a sleeve, you want to see it on the sleeve, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to see something that's worth £10,000. But you don't need £10,000 to do a sleeve for U2.
We found collaborators. They must collaborate with us. We have never fielded that. But I'm really interested in this area. And if you're interested in the group and the organization of the group, this is vital. People, there are things about this group that I just feel that people miss. People miss the fact that we don't do things we don't want to do. You know, and this is important for a group. All those things that you've mentioned are a part of. We don't, our records don't sell because we do center spreads in magazines. They don't sell because we make commercials. They sell because people actually want them. And, you know, these last three years, more than 10 years before that, was about the record companies were in charge. This is the era of the record company. I mean, even friends of mine, you know, I don't say too much. I mean, you think ZTT, the era of the record company. And we don't subscribe to that era. Because we bought our, through playing to people face to face and live things, we bought ourselves a position of just selling because of the music.
It depends on whether you see yourself as working for yourself or not. And it's certainly that there is a feeling when you are a young man starting out of a record company, of this thing that comes along, gives you a big bag of money, and you can go off and be a rock star for the rest of your life and really enjoy it. But you trade an awful lot for that.
Yeah.
And we have always seen ourselves as not having traded it, of keeping the controls and keeping the responsibilities ourselves. We work for ourselves. We don't put a record out because somebody in a rep company tells us we have to. We put it out because we believe in it.
Why do you think so many people don't do that? Why do you think so many
people get up on the on the showbiz side of...
Well, somewhere along the line, I suspect you must have made the decision that you were not going to become pop stars. And that... Or maybe that was...
I think it was four stars. We're not very good pop stars. We're part-time pop stars. Honestly, we're very uncomfortable in that role. Even the edge, the gentleman, it just is not given to center stage spreads. You know, he's just... We're not cut out. I'm hardly the kind of front man, you know, as in front man. You know, I don't know what the hell I am actually, but we're not that. You know, I think we've always found as a group that our weaknesses, we turn them into strengths. You know, we're not good. I'd not be good on Swap Shop or with my arm around Dave Lee Travis on top of the Pops. I can't just pull jokes out of a hat, or I can just smile for a photographer on cue as I've just been telling him. You know, our laughter is something that's very private. I mean, the group, you know, well, I think I mentioned that you should have stayed around because the other side of the group, of the group's unity, is the fact that it's quite funny to be around each other. The group understands as members. When we go to music business, the rare times we go to music business gatherings, you know, the group will arrive and will filter to the crowd and will always probably find, you know, the four of us at the other end of that gathering, you know, cracking, you know, just cracking up over something somebody else has done, or it's a private thing, so we're not able to turn it on. Like, I can't even turn on a good humor. I can't turn on a good interview. I can't do anything like that. And the problem with our live shows, and that has been, you know, the end of the war tour, is that we're trying to turn it on so much. We so much wanted every gig to be the best gig we ever played that we were short-circuiting.
Yeah, you outgrow what you've done very quickly. When you make a record a year later, it seems incredibly old to you because you've moved on from it. But in retrospect, to answer your question about that way in which I suppose we've defined our own terms and built our audience and stuff, I think the October album, in many ways, although now when we look back on it, it was incredible, but the fact that it wasn't commercially all that successful at the time, I think made us have to really enforce our commitment to the importance of how we felt about what we were doing. Yeah. And we weren't going to devalue that record in any way by playing any games.
Yeah.
Correct.
October was the turning point in everybody's commitment to the group. From Chris Blackwell's to Paul McGinnis's to Adam Clayton's to me, to mine, to our audience, to everything. Because it broke the rules as a group. It was a spiritual record. A post-punk band makes, and it made a lot of people feel very nervous, you know. And you know, as Paul paced up and down control room, you know, and Lily White, you know, was kind of holding the.
Well, he was holding it together.
He was holding it together, you know, with his head on the desk. Hand on the faders and wondering if he'd get out of there alive, you know. And it was all this real tense situation. I was going, you know, because I didn't know where I was. And I was just saying, well, I try to sing this song, I try to stand it up, I'm on my feet. you know, I can't sing this, is this or that, what is this that I'm singing, does this make sense or not? Somebody find the person who can speak Latin, you know, what is this? You know, listening to Gregorian chant, always just a sense something was coming out of it. Of course, truly Irish. You know, you learn, if you understand the Irish, you know, the two basic rules, you know, religion and politics, don't talk about it. There's this banter, walk into walls of it, you know, boom, end up with a broken nose. But there is, you know, Paul, I mean, Paul's going to listen and say, look, this album is a little different. And Chris goes, of course, Chris, brilliant thing about Chris Blackwell is he was really on black music. And of course, black music. And these people, you know, they're free. They know, you know, they are free. They express, and of course, the sexuality and spirituality has always been linked to black music. It's the very essence of black music. To him, it's not strange at all. He's not as hung up. And of course, it's white people that are really hung up, you know. And of course, this was the thing about James Brown anyway. You know, as he sex machine, you know. Well, I mean, you think of music in the 50s and 60s. Buddy Holly still wore a suit, you know, and his hair cut short. How are you? Smiling to the camera, black music is wow! And it's hallelujah, and it's but he's just taken it in. It's everything. It's total abandonment and expression. And everyone was getting nervous and getting embarrassed.
Trust and faith personified.
And people don't, a lot of the things, I mean, I can understand why you used to get up from some people's nose. You know, I can understand why people can come to a live show and go, what is going on here? You know, because I have a gift for going over the top. I mean, forgive me.
But
it is abandonment, and it
has to be judged in the best possible light.
And England is very guilty of the colours, even in rock and roll, I think, being terribly.
I thought the Blackwell's attitude towards you too was also, you know, playing to how it's been with black bands, and you know, obviously brought up as you made and all that. But more the fact that, you know, so many of the bands that he champions. Brilliant band, but I think they did not have any initial success. In fact, most of them did not have any sort of success, and I think that perhaps had a lot to do with.
Yeah, well, of course, the first test before October was 11 o'clock TikTok. There was some band signed to Island Records. Remember, the press coverage at the time was ridiculous, and this band was to put out as a single, you know, and we were introduced to all the people who were going to, you know, promote our single, and it's going to go to radio. Here we are, give them a 5-minute single, which, you know, everyone's a little puzzled, except the people, you know, and go, this is what you want to do, we'll do it. I'm telling you how you might get much radio play. And you know, I remember as it arrived on the radio, people say, very loud snare, this record. You know, Martin had it. And here it was. And people didn't understand. Chris Blackwell. It's okay. It's bands, you know, let them grow, let them do as they wish. We're 18 years old. 18 and 19, let them grow. Paul saying, you better let them grow, you know. I'm just saying, we can't do anything else. That, it sounds to me like a number one. You know, we thought it was a pop song.
Well, I think that's the great thing about Ireland is that when you say you're releasing a single, they don't think about it as a potential number one. They think of it as a piece of music. And once they like it as a piece of music, then it's a potential number one. You know, it's not... Well,
I think the
chorus isn't catchy enough.
The irony of working with Eno and Lanwa on this project, which was, you know, I mean, is that we ended up with the first single we'd ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, to me, I mean,
yeah, that's very true.
It does. I don't know. It's remarkable because.
But it's like, it's it's a peculiar song in amongst the rest of the album, isn't it? It's yeah. sort of.
It was probably the last thing Eno expected to come out of the sessions as well.
He loves it from that time, you know. Yeah. He loves it. Just, and it is. It's the stepping stone really from the past to the future. And what just happened is it's beautiful, and it's so brilliant because it just did not prepare people for the EOP to come, not at all.
Yeah, no, that it's a very right feeling song.
I was falling on your feet. All right. Really falling. Very, really.
You were talking about the violin and the way they treat your, they put out your product.
Product? No, they don't call our product.
We don't take that back. We've got your singles now.
I mean, it's nice to use jargon.
But. I mean, how do you think that will? I mean, obviously, you can see the way that ZVP marked their product. Frankly, just being able to discern that. And I mean, how will things change in under Robinson's leadership?
Well, not very much for us. It'll probably change a lot for Ireland.
Yeah.
But I think Dave, I don't think he'd be embarrassed by admitting that he's interested in selling lots of records. That's his job. But I think the attitude which he has to it is not wrong. I mean, he can accept and understand and cooperate totally with what we want to do. And he sees us in the light of what I'm saying as a band to be taken in that way, but I think he also acknowledges the need of other projects in music to be treated in a slightly different way, and he's not blind to that. So I think there's an honesty and an understanding there that can satisfy both sides of what selling records is about as a managing director's job.
I'm not introduced by it. I love my lane trip. You know, I hate, for that to come across. You know, there's a mutual respect as a result of locking horns occasionally and, the push being into the book. And, that's what it's based on. It's not, I love my label.
Well, I think ultimately you don't think of them as your label,
Yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about the relationship. There is no domination of we're your record label.
Yeah.
It's when we have something, it's almost a cooperation thing of we'll talk to them and tell them what we're planning to do, and it's like a service they provide. They tell us whether it can happen.
By the way, I mean, the man downstairs, Rob Partridge, there's a lot more to do with Island Records than he would let anyone. He's a lot more.
I'd go even further than that. I think he doesn't. He he really doesn't, well, obviously he has a loyalty to Ireland, but when he's on the road or when he's with us, I think his loyalty and responsibility he sees as to us. Not to promoting product and getting the units up.
And
I think that's very unusual, because it's, there's obviously a conflict of interest. If he's the press officer of the label, that there would inevitably be a conflict of interest between theirs and ours, but he decides very much with us. And that's very, very reassuring. And it means that you can have arguments based on sort of clear, honest principles, as opposed to any
overpriced. The sort of things that we've talked about, are those the main reasons that you just re-signed with that bill? Is that the tenfold or pay? What can they offer you that?
It's very clear to us that we don't want this coast to die. There are a lot of companies that offer a lot more money.
Oh, well, this is what Paul said.
It was not, and wouldn't want to wear that sort of thing, because it might be great. Ourselves when they take the cash. I hate this, little boy blue. It makes me sick. That's what we got. We put a boy's face on the cover. Even thought we were naive. We thought people were here. God, beware. We weren't stupid, actually. We were naive. We weren't stupid. Naivety and stupid here.
It comes back to the basis of making your decisions on what's comfortable.
Phone if they don't bring out the
importance and the basis on which those decisions are made. We're very clear about what our requirements are, and secondary to that, there is, I suppose, bloodstock. eligibility for being traded and bartered with in terms of money and all that kind of thing. And I think, well, we realised what was important to us, and the island had something that ultimately became much more important than being involved in us basing a decision on what record company we wanted to be with, because they would pay us a lot of money.
But in a sense, you said that earlier, out of the room, that you hope you can always hang on to your naivety.
Yeah.
The kind of notion that you, the line in Rejoice, I can't change the world, but I can change the world in me. It seems like you kind of looked into yourself and decided what your values are, and then tried to impose them on everyone else.
I don't think our values are imposed on people. I think what happens is people see what our values are and realize why they're important. I don't think there's any imposition. I think people see the way in which it works and they respond and respect that.
Yeah. But that's unusual, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I hate no's. I hate to talk about business like me here, but, we did that because of that, and we did this, it's just, it was really an instinctive thing. It wasn't that we knew it all. We set out a plan. No one ever said you the fact that you two had a plan. Campaign. I hate words like campaign. Campaign product. There'll be a few more by the end of the night. But there are words, like that suggest, and it's instinct. You're fighting all the way, kicking and pushing and going and making our music, and then saying, why won't you play our music? I don't like it.
Hello. Yeah, this is 443. Can we have some toasted cheese and ham sandwiches? And can you do a toasted steak sandwich? yeah, two toasted steak. What's anyone want to drink?
I'll have the Marie Rosé. Two toasted steak. Three toasted cheese and ham.
Okay, hang on. No cheese. No cheese and ham. Cheese or ham.
Both. You can have a mixture.
Yeah, have both and trade them. Yeah. Okay. Let's have two cheese and two ham and two steak and.
Spare bag in the house.
What are you having?
I'll have the shrimp and avocado.
Yeah, can we have some chips? And
shrimp and avocado?
Can you do shrimps and avocado?
No. Alright,
or avocado. Yeah, we'll have that. And, ten Heineken.
This is Ireland.
Please. Five. Okay. Okay.
Make them from.
Thanks a lot.
What are the chances of them getting on that road?
Remote. She went when the operator rang up. She said,
"Come on." Okay.
She said, "If the room service been in touch with you," I said, "No." She said, "That's grand."
One of the things that Bobby was here is that I was trying to get across to you earlier today that it often says me that people don't see the probably open. Please don't use this, but the intelligence of what we do, i.e. that they think that because I treat a person as a human being, that maybe the guy doesn't know any better, you know? We went to a record company in the era of Watch Out Boy, Watch Out the Boy, Set Your Soul. Remember Dave McCullough? Remember that journey? Old time. we always said, no, if you treat people as people, they will respond as people. If you treat them as a cog in a machine, that was one of the simple little thing there to do equal to all. But you'd be surprised. I've seen contemporaries of ours through their paranoia really dealt themselves
if you go in with that attitude of treating like people will for you like you're treating something like Virgin or PBS. Do you honestly think that you'll be...
Well, you see, we have one extreme advantage over a lot of people, which is that if somebody, as you say, doesn't respond in that way, we have Paul. Right? But Paul's attitude is that. But if somebody doesn't respect that, yeah, and thinks they can get one over on us,
right.
I mean, he will, he will really reassert ourselves as
he's not the right to bear of our grief. I mean, seriously, that's the other side of the coin. That's why we people have that impression sometimes. We are capable, the head book. There is intelligence in what we do. We try this approach and it works. And it's the same when it comes to, you see, interviews. And myself, Gilmore will not play the game, will not sit back and make you get your spade out and and can feel it, then you are giving them something. You know, not used to this. Right? And it really, really bugs me when people don't realize, they should say, ah, this guy's not used to this.